Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And before we get rolling on our content this morning, we just want to remind you that this is the second to last day of our membership drive, and we've got a contest deadline coming up at noon. So when you pledge your financial support to WNYC for all the reasons that you listen to this station, you will automatically be entered to win a trip to Tuscany, courtesy of Bloomsbury Auctions. That's a trip for two, and the deadline for that is noon today. You don't have to pledge to enter, but we sure hope you'll support WNYC with a contribution. But in either case, the deadline for this contest is noon today. 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or go to WNYC.org. Don't forget, everyone who has pledged through the entire drive or the buyback campaign is automatically entered, and the deadline for you to get in, with or without a pledge, is 1-888-376-WNYC or WNYC.org. The deadline is noon today, and of course, we hope you'll support the station when you do. Thanks a lot, everybody.
We've had our disagreements during this campaign, but we all admire her courage and her commitment and her perseverance. And no matter how this primary ends, Senator Clinton has shattered myths and broken barriers and changed the America in which my daughters and your daughters will come of age. And for that, we are grateful to her.
That's why I'm in this race, to fight for your future, and that's why, whatever happens, I'll work as hard as I can to elect a Democratic president this fall.
Senator Obama and Senator Clinton being gracious last night as they split two states, and Obama clinched the majority of elected delegates to the Democratic convention, depending on who you count. Clinton claims the majority of the popular vote as of now, depending on who you count. But here's a question. Are demographics really destiny in the presidential race? That's been one of the assumptions as Clinton and Obama keep winning in their categories. But I've been looking at the exit polls, and here's something that I think is being underreported this morning. Obama did much better in Oregon than he did in Kentucky among the same kinds of white voters. Working class whites in Kentucky went for Clinton by a whopping 4-1 margin. You've probably been hearing that. But working class whites in Oregon divided almost evenly, just 51% for Hillary, 48% for Barack. Similarly with whites overall. Clinton won the white vote in Kentucky by 50 points. Obama won whites overall in Oregon with 57% to 43%. Now, Obama's chief campaign strategist, David Axelrod, was on The Takeaway this morning, and he said the Electoral College strategy against McCain will be different from Democrats in the past.
We're going to stretch the electoral map, John. We were in the state of Oregon last night. We won in the state of Oregon last night, a landslide victory. And we've won victories in states throughout the country that I think are considered swing states. Iowa is another one. But I also think we're going to add states. Colorado is a good example that the Democrats haven't won. And we're going to cobble together a great new majority.
So, David Axelrod on The Takeaway, talking to John Hockenberry and Adore Udoji, and with me now, WNYC Political Director Andrea Bernstein and Jonathan Martin from Politico.com. Andrea, I was struck by that phrase from David Axelrod, stretch the electoral map. Is Obama hoping to win different states and expecting to lose different states than Kerry or Gore?
Yes. And it's fascinating because yesterday I was speaking or having an email conversation with one top Obama supporter, and I said, well, how can you win Florida? And he emailed me back, do we need to win Florida? So, I mean, I think that publicly what, of course, we're going to hear, we're going to win every state, 50-state strategy, et cetera, but Obama is hoping to win some states. I mean, Virginia is a key example. I mean, that state's been trending Democratic. Just a big upset last year in the Senate, in the U.S. Senate in Virginia.
All right, Jonathan Martin, gut check on this. Can he really win Virginia? I mean, Virginia is one that I think of as a real staunch Republican state.
It also happens to be my home state, and I know the politics there pretty well, and I'm skeptical that Obama could win there. I do think he can make it very, very close and force McCain to spend time and money there and perhaps get it to under 5 points. But this is a place that has some very culturally conservative parts, but also the suburbs in Northern Virginia and down in Hampton Roads, a lot of active duty and retired military who would really take well to McCain. So I think it would be tough for him. His best bet, I think, appears to be Iowa, maybe Colorado, perhaps a Nevada or New Mexico when it comes to those pickups.
So still, Jonathan, no Democrat in more than 30 years has carried whites as a whole in a presidential election, in case anybody thinks this is unique to Obama. And yet Bill Clinton and Carter won their races. So does Obama's win in Oregon among white voters and the near tie, even among white working class voters that I indicated, mean that the warnings about him not being electable because of his problem with that demographic are overblown, that it's more of a state-by-state, region-by-region thing?
I agree. It's more of a state-by-state, region-by-region. Not all white working-class voters are the same. And shock, this country is diverse even when it comes to similar demographics. And clearly, he's got a problem when it comes to some of these folks in places like rural Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Ohio, West Virginia, that sort of Appalachian range. And it's a different ballgame in other parts of the country that tend to have more progressive voters in rural areas, places like Wisconsin or Oregon. Their rural white voters tend to be different. So it depends on where you're talking about, but there's no question that Obama has got to take this time, late spring, early summer, to find who he is, talk about his values, his life story. What's hurting him, he's an unknown quantity, and a lot of these rural white voters don't like what they see initially.
And Andrea, tellingly, Obama went back to Iowa, one of those alternative swing states, and of course, home of his historic first victory, and in an almost all-white state, we should recall. But I think a central question for him is whether the Reverend Wright controversy and the cling to their guns and religion thing has drained support among white voters who would have chosen him before. So, Andrea Bernstein, any indication in Iowa, for example, whether whites who voted for Obama then are experiencing buyer's remorse now?
There doesn't seem to be any indication. I mean, I think that quite a few polls show Obama up in a general election. But I think that we should just take one step back and remember there's a sort of gun-to-the-head effect of having to go into a voting booth. So we're sitting around now, and right now voters are choosing, in some states, three left to go, between Obama and Clinton, and that's a choice that they're making. So at this point, which is, I will point out, there is longer from now till the November election than there was from the Iowa caucus till now.
Uh-huh.
So there's a long time to go until November, and people are going to be making a different set of choices. An election is always a choice. It's not a hypothetical choice. So now there's three people. At some point, there will be two people, and that is going to change a set of choices. So, you know, the other thing about Obama, the other really big news, is Hillary Clinton is a losing candidate in the Democratic primary, raised more money in April than John McCain as the presumptive Republican nominee. Obama has $40 million in the bank now to spend. And, you know, he may be unknown. I think that Jonathan's right. Still, quite a few voters don't know him. It's kind of hard to believe. But when you have that kind of money, you have some control over your image. And, you know, last time in the Kerry Bush election, the Democratic Party primary was a month before the Republican convention, which meant that the Democrats had to stretch their general election money out over this longer period of time. But if money is not such an issue, then it does change the dynamic.
WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein with us, and Jonathan Martin from Politico.com. As for Senator Clinton last night, she was both gracious, as we heard before, and tenacious in the face of her likely defeat. Here is the tenacious, as she referred to an 89-year-old Kentucky woman who volunteered for the Clinton campaign.
But she's not finished yet. She's been volunteering out of our campaign office in Covington to help our campaign break the highest and hardest glass ceiling in the land.
Now, Andrea, we heard that glass ceiling reference, and that was one of several references in her speech to sexism. something I believe is actually new for her to say so prominently and publicly, is it?
Yeah, I think it is. And she actually spoke quite candidly about sexism in her campaign. It's certainly something that I have seen on the trail. There's a sign that is I've seen many people holding, life's a you can't say the word on the radio, don't vote for one. There's been a lot of sort of pretty brutal stuff that has been under the radar. It hasn't really served the Clinton campaign to talk about this, but there is this incredible well of emotion out there. And, Geraldine Ferraro was telling the New York Times the other day she might actually vote for McCain. I mean, it's sort of hard to believe come November, the Democrat that she's been, that she would make that choice. But there is this big emotion out there for women. And the Obama clip that we heard at the top, where he was sort of talking about his personal stake and what Hillary Clinton has done for his daughters, was a very interesting moment of connection. And one of the most fascinating things about that moment in the speech last night was that when he mentioned Hillary Clinton, he was cheered. Last week, when John Edwards mentioned Hillary Clinton, he was booed. There is this sense in the Obama campaign that they are really trying to reach that point of emotion and say, we're in it with you, and to move the party forward.
So if they're trying to move the party together, Jonathan, why bring up the sexism now?
Oh, because there's a degree of bitterness. Look, I think that she's human. She's going back and forth between being the good sport and trying to sort of put on a brave face and bring the party together, but also expressing some real frustration. They are ticked off, the Clintons are. They think that she's gotten railroaded by the media. By frankly, a lot of men, and they saw race talked about again and again, and they think that gender issues were also a factor and were largely ignored by folks in the media. But look, when candidates are losing or on the verge of losing, they tend to blame everybody but themselves, and obviously the media is sort of a natural punching bag, and it's a punching bag that obviously can't punch back.
One more thing. And actually, before that, I'll just mention that the next important event is next Saturday, May 31st, when the Convention Rules Committee meets to decide how to handle Michigan and Florida. And that's before the final three primaries, Montana, South Dakota, Puerto Rico. But the illness of Senator Edward Kennedy, for someone who we seem to always hear about as a staunch liberal partisan, he seems to get a great deal of love from people on both sides of the aisle, even in this era of extreme polarization in the Senate. And here is Republican Senator John McCain.
My thoughts and my humble...
Sorry, that was Senator Byrd. We'll hear from him in a minute. I think we have Senator McCain.
Our thoughts and prayers go out to his family and to him. I have said on numerous occasions, I have described Ted Kennedy as the last lion in the Senate, and I have held that view because he remains the single most effective member of the Senate if you want to get results.
That's quite a thing to say, even for someone who maybe not be the biggest partisan in the world, as McCain is not, but to say he's the most effective member of the Senate, and that's widely held on both sides, isn't it? Jonathan.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is somebody who is revered in the institution. And keep in mind, the Senate is a clubby place, somewhere where even in this day of hyper-partisanship, there are close relationships, and especially among those of an older guard. John McCain, obviously, somebody who's in the same sort of generation of Ted Kennedy, they have a genuinely close friendship, and you can tell in his voice there that he is certainly upset.
Andrea, briefly.
Yeah, I think that he is. I mean, I think that, the age issue is certainly going to be coming up for McCain. And I think that, I do think there's a friendship and there's a sense of personal tragedy.
Right.
I don't think it's great for McCain when a senator gets a deathly illness in office.
Jonathan.
I'm not sure that it will sort of translate that way, but there's no question that McCain's age is going to be a recurring factor in this campaign.
Jonathan Martin from Politico, WNYC Political Director Andrew Bernstein, thanks a lot. And we'll go out.
Thank you.
With Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, moved to tears yesterday on hearing of Kennedy's illness.
My thoughts and my humble prayers are with Senator Kennedy, my dear friend Ted.